Good morning.
So we're picking up where we left off yesterday, and that is with the riddle: what's higher than heaven, lower than earth, and if you eat it, you'll die. Who remembers the answer?
Nothing.
Right? And the way that we arrived at that solution is we broke it down into its three separate statements: what X is higher than heaven, X is lower than earth, if you eat X, you'll die. And then we tried to come up with some sort of a word, a definition, something that fits into all three of the contexts. And we had our concept X yesterday as well. What was the name, or what was, instead of calling it X, what were we calling it? What was the concept that the Gemara uses, which is cryptic, that we don't know exactly what it is, and that we need to go through all of the examples which the Gemara gives and figure out what definition fits into each of the examples? What was that concept that we were seeking the definition of? Taseh v'lo min ha'asui. Excellent. And we had yesterday four different examples in the Gemara, and we have one of them in words and three of them in pictures. So example number one was tzitzis, where the corner got ripped, the tzitzis remained intact, and you repair the corner around the tzitzis. That was example number one. Example number two is when a person has a triangle beged, they put in three tzitziot onto the three corners of the triangle, and then they square the triangle and put in the four tzitzit. Example number three was when a person has three etzpaot of a garment, and they put in their tzitzis in those three etzpaot, and then they continue to weave the remainder of the garment, and when the garment is completed, they put in the remaining two tzitziot. And we noted that those three cases were cases where it is unanimously agreed, at least as far as we can tell right now, that these are examples of taseh v'lo min ha'asui. And then, all the way at the end of yesterday's shiur, we came across a fourth example, which was a controversial example. It was not a case where everyone unanimously agreed that it belongs to the category of taseh v'lo min ha'asui, but rather there was a machloket. So let's just take a look at that machloket again. It's on daf mem amud beis, and it appears 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines from the bottom, first word on the line. 10 lines from the bottom, first word on the line. Mi Amar. Mi Amar. Mi Amrinon. 10 lines? Mi Amrinon.
Oh, okay.
Taf Sevelo Min Ha'asoi. Dude, does this concept even exist in halacha? Is there some sort of a psul, right, in something which was manufactured, prefabricated tzitzis? Is that something which is pasul? The Ha'amar Rabbi Zeira, didn't Rabbi Zeira say that hitil lumuteles kishera, that a person who put tzitzis onto a four-cornered garment that already has tzitzis on it, that the second pair of tzitzis is kosher? In other words, if you cut off the first pair of tzitzis, then you can continue wearing the garment with the second pair. And so the Gemara is defining this case of hitil lumuteles as an example of taseh v'lo min ha'asui. That's why the Gemara says the fact that Rabbi Zeira thinks that hitil l'muteles does not pose a problem proves to us that no instance of taseh v'lo min ha'asui will prove a problem. If hitil l'muteles is not a problem, if it's kshera, so then all the other cases of min ha'asui, of prefabricated tzitzis, should also not pose a problem. Now, we left off yesterday with the following difficulty. We surveyed so far one definition of taseh v'lo min ha'asui. And that was the definition of Tosfos, which was, that what is taseh v'lo min ha'asui? What's the definition of that concept for Tosfos?
Put the tzitzit on the beged, not the beged on the tzitzit.
Right. Prefabricated, where the tzitzis, right, you're putting the beged on the tzitzis, that's min ha'asui, right? The tzitzis are already made as you're still completing the beged. That's min ha'asui. The tzitzis are already made as you're completing the beged. What you need is to be osa, to be tasa the tzitzis. And we saw the Levush and others explain this Tosfos basis in the Psukim from a pasuk. It says, "Gedilim ta'aselach al arba kanfos kisuscha asher techaseba." You're supposed to make tzitzis on the four corners of your beged. The implication being that the four corners of the beged are present before the tzitzis begin to be affixed, before the tzitzis begin to be made. You have first the arba kanfos kisuscha, and when you've got the arba kanfos kisuscha, that's when the Torah tells you, "Gedilim ta'aselach." So let's just go through these four cases and see whether Tosfos' definition fits with each of these four cases. Right, number one, you rip the corner of the tzitzis remain intact, the baguette is destroyed, and you repair the corner of the baguette around the tzitzis. So there is the baguette first, the arba kanfos come first, or do the tzitzis come first? The tzitzis came first, the baguette was destroyed, you're basically creating the baguette anew, so the tzitzis preceded the baguette. What about the case of the three-cornered baguette where you put the tzitzis on and then you square the triangle? Right, again, you don't have the arba kanfos right before you have those first three tzitzios. The first three tzitzios precede the arba kanfos. What about case number three where I have the three etzbaot and I put the tzitzis on and then I complete the baguette? So which one came first, the tzitzis or the baguette, the arba kanfos or the tzitzis? Once again, it's the tzitzis, because I only have two of the kanfos of the ultimate baguette. I only have two of the corners of the ultimate baguette in that case when I'm putting on those tzitzis. And so the remaining two corners are manufactured after the tzitzis. What about the fourth case, though? I have a four-cornered baguette that already has one pair of tzitzis, and now I put on a second pair of tzitzis. So which one came first? The arba kanfos kisuscha or the tzitzis, the gedilim?
Both came after. The baguette is both. Then you're just adding one.
No, you're
the baguette. I hear a lot of people saying the baguette came first. I hear some hesitancy. What's the hesitancy?
Second pair of two pairs.
How are you passeling it, though?
Because you're supposed to have, on each corner, you're supposed to have one, you're not supposed to have two.
So maybe there's a different psul, but is that a psul of tasa velomina asoi? Thank you very much, Rav Shlomo. Tasa velomina asoi for Tosfos means that the arba kanfos kisuscha must precede the gedilim. In this case, do the arba kanfos kisuscha precede the gedilim?
Yes.
So for Tosfos, this should not pose a problem of tasa velomina asoi. Now, the Gemara assumes that it's tasa velomina asoi, but is it possible that there is someone in the Gemara who doesn't think that this is tasa velomina asoi, who thinks that this is
eventually
that this will be kosher? Is there anyone in the Gemara who says that this fourth case, or who might say that this fourth case is not an example of tasa velomina asoi, but rather is a case of normative tzitzis? You! Why?
Because why do you have a license to see food?
You've been peeking ahead. No? You're mechaving then to the next line of Gemara. But that's not what I'm asking for. I'm asking someone that we've already seen. Right, we've already seen the Gemara assumed, right, by connecting this case to the previous three, the Stama de Gemara is assuming that they all belong to this category of Tasa Velomina Asui. That's what allowed the Gemara to say, from the fact that Rabbi Zeira says that this is kosher, it must be that Rabbi Zeira says that this and this and this are also kosher. Is there anyone with a name, not the Stama de Gemara, someone with a name that we've encountered who might challenge that assertion, who might say that this and this and this are examples of min ha'asoi and are not kosher, but this is not an example of min ha'asoi and therefore is kosher? Rabbi Zeira, right? If the Gemara's question could be answered very neatly by saying that these three cases are genuine tasa velomina asoi, that's why they're pasul. But this is not a case of tasa velomina asoi, and that's why Rabbi Zeira says it's kosher. Now, that seems to be a beautiful answer, right? According to Tosfos' definition, the Gemara's question, right, is just mind-boggling. It doesn't really work, right? But the actual halachos work out very nicely. These three cases will be pasul, and the last case of Rabbi Zera will be kosher, and there's no question at all. So Stama the Gemara would pose a challenge to Tosfos, right? But and if we're left in a bind, let's say that we find no way of resolving the Gemara's question, right, perhaps we could suggest on our own that Rabbi Zera subscribes to Tosfos' definition. That's why he draws a distinction between the three cases that we encountered earlier and this fourth case. So that's a possibility. Let's see what the Gemara does. Right, the Gemara, I'll just tell you in advance, the Gemara is not going to give this answer. Right, but what answer the Gemara does give is so complicated and bothersome to many Mefarshim that it sort of opens up the box for a whole range of out-of-the-box answers.
Why did you say originally that case number four was possible?
The Gemara assumed that. We don't know what definition the Gemara is using. That was what troubled us. We had Tosfos definition. That Rabbi Zera says Hitil Mutalas Kshera. The Gemara says if Rabbi Zera says that Hitil Mutalas is Kshera, then it must be that all cases of Tasa Velomena Asoy are kosher. Right, that's the Gemara. Do we really have this idea that Minha Asoy is Pasul? Didn't Rabbi Zera say Hitil Mutalas kosher, which means that all cases of Minha Asoy should be kosher?
So we're assuming that the answer is that he put another parenthesis on an existing parenthesis.
That's what Hitil and Mutalas means, right? It's already Mutalas. There already are tzitzis, right, which are Mutal, right? The garment is being notail the tzitzis, so to speak, right? Like Netilas Yadayim, you pick up the cup, so the garment is picking up the tzitzis. It already is Mutalas. It's already picking up the tzitzis. And then you are Matil, right? You cause it to pick up four more tzitzis, right? So that's Hitil le Mutalas. I think that's pretty much unanimous, the definition of Rabbi Zera's case, yes?
You could say that by putting up four tzitzis.
There may be other psulim, but Rabbi Zera, who says kosher, clearly doesn't subscribe to any psul.
No, I understand that. You could say it's possible, because for whatever reason.
But not for Tasa Velomina Asui.
Once, if it's possible, and then you cut it off, then you have tzitzis that are already made.
Okay, so you're positing a different definition, right? You're already going to a different meaning. We said Tasa Velomina Asui means you need to have the Arba Kanfos Ksuscha prior to the Gedilim Tasalach. So there you go. So one second. Let's actually, once you've mentioned that, let's actually work through this, okay? So the fact is that the Gemara's assumption right now poses a difficulty for Tosfos. And so is there any definition of Tasa Velomina Asoi that we can advance that is consistent with the Stama de Gemara's question, with Stama de Gemara's assumption that all four cases are examples of Tasa Velomina Asoi? So what's the definition that you're advancing?
He's saying when there's eight, it's no good. Now, when you take off four, it becomes good.
And what's it that we need a definition of Tasa Velomina Asoi that encompasses all four cases?
If you don't have a beggar that's between tzitzis,
that's the first explanation.
No, no, this is a different. The first explanation is that the four corners must precede the tzitzis.
Yeah.
And now we're saying that a chiyuv, an obligation, right, that the garment must have an obligation of tzitzis before the tzitzis are placed on the garment. Now, what you've succeeded in doing, right, by that definition is saying, let's see, in this case, right, where the corner got ripped, so
there's no obligation anymore.
There's no obligation because it's now a three-corner garment, right, so a garment has no obligation. In the second case, one second, the second case, triangle, right, was the garment obligated in tzitzis?
No.
What about the third case, where you've got the three etzpaot? Was the garment obligated in tzitzis?
Yes.
Why, yes?
Because it was four corners, you just added on a piece, right?
Oh, okay, so that may depend on the machloket between Mr. Amster and Mr. Ben Chaviv yesterday. Because Mr. Ben Chaviv said that the reason that this garment is not good is because it's too small, right? If I take a right, why don't we have tzitzis on our ties, right? Because they're not big enough to require tzitzis. They've got four corners, one, two, three. Well, actually, they got six corners, but four is part of six, right? So a garment that's too small, right, is not obligated in tzitzis. So if it's only three etzba'ot, right, something like this size, it's too small. Hopefully we'll address that in the second shiur today. So it seems to be too small. So that was what Mr. Ben Chaviv said, in which case the garment is for sure exempt, right, from tzitzis. It's too small, and under no circumstances would you have to put on tzitzis. And that was one of the interpretations that Rashi offered of that case where you wove three etzba'ot, right, and you put on the tzitzis already. But Rashi had a second explanation as well, which Mr. Amster was mechavin to yesterday, and that was that your intentions, right, your expectations, what you anticipate the garment will look like in the end, defines what or how and when tzitzis need to be affixed to it. And so therefore, if I intend that the garment will have corners that are this far away from one another, so it's not obligated in tzitzis until either I get this far away or I change my mind. And so even if it's bigger,
if you change your mind, nothing's going to help.
Well, let's say I wanted to make it this big, and then I decide I'm going to stop over here.
So you didn't do it.
So I didn't do it, but then I'd have to put tzitzis on over here. Meaning whatever the final part of the garment is, so that's where I need to put on tzitzis. Until I finalize it, I say, okay, this is the final size. So then, Mr. Amster is saying, I will be exempt from tzitzis, because tzitzis, right, it's almost as if we have the architect's drawing, the designer's drawing, and as long as the garment does not yet match the designer's drawing, we don't consider that its final two corners have been created. That was, I think, am I correctly paraphrasing what you said?
I'm not sure if that's what I said.
Okay, would you...
yesterday was a long time ago.
Okay, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay, if it's not what you said, it's what Rashi said, but that's what I understood you to have said yesterday. So there it's a little bit harder. You could argue on the one hand, right, that yes, the garment is the right size, and so in a sense it is obligated in tzitzis already, right? But at the same time, you could also argue that because of the discrepancy between my envisioned size and the actual size, right, it's never going to become chayev in tzitzis until the two of them dovetail with one another, until the envisioned size, the expected size, is the same as the actual size. And now, finally, we get to the fourth case, which is where we'll get all of the dividends from Rav Menachem's pshat. Right here, even though the four corners, right, are already all completed, but this is not a garment, right, which is it's a garment that is chayav in tzitzis. It's a garment that doesn't need tzitzis. The reason that it doesn't need tzitzis is different from the reasons that the previous three don't need tzitzis. The previous three don't need tzitzis because the Torah never said that they need tzitzis. The fourth one doesn't need tzitzis because it already has tzitzis. But the common denominator for all of them, right, is that you put tzitzis on a garment that didn't need those tzitzis. And so that would seem to be one of the three definitions that Rashi offers for tasa v'lo mina asoy, meaning we were working with tosfos, prefabricated, in other words, that the tzitzis preceded the completion of the corners. But for Rashi, the definition might be unnecessary tzitzis. So any time that you manufacture tzitzis while the tzitzis are not necessary, that's a problem of tasa v'lo min ha'asoy. Right? The manufacturer preceded not the point in time when the garment is complete, but it preceded the point in time when the tzitzis became necessary. The tzitzis should be manufactured in response, right, to a necessity, to a pressing need. They shouldn't be made, right, just redundantly for no reason. Yes?
Is there an avail by putting on this compared tzitzis?
We'll get there. Next line. We'll get there.
Mm-hmm. What is the asoi?
It can't be warehouse.
Asui simply means prefabricated, but prefabricated, the word pre, right, assumes prior to some point in time. So the question is, what is that point in time? For Tosfos, the point in time is the point when the four corners are completed. For Rashi, the point in time is the point when the tzitzis are needed for this garment. Okay. So that's the simple Rashi and Tosfos, and now we get to read the next two lines, and potentially it's just going to blow away everything that we've tried to valiantly conquer. for the past two shiurim. So let's take a look. So we had this problem. Let's work with Rashi's definition now, because that's what explains the Gemara's Hava Amina. So the definition is tzitzis that are prefabricated prior to their being necessary, to their being called for. And Rabbi Zeira says that this case, even though the tzitzis are not called for, it's kosher. And in these cases, where the tzitzis are not called for, it's not kosher. So what's the difference? So Rava gives the following explanation. Amar Rava, says Rava, Hashta bebal tosif kai. Now, he is, kai is like omid, it's a very difficult word to translate it to English, but kayam, right? He's standing, he's holding in a place of baltosif. So if he's holding in a place of baltosif, he's standing, right, in a place of baltosif when he affixes those second quartet of tzitzis, so maisa lo have. So if he's violating baltosif, then is that an exclamation point or is that a period? Let's read it with a period for now. Maisa lo have, because he's violating baltosif, therefore we don't dignify his action with the title masa. Now, why is the word masa important? Right, because that's the same shoresh, Mr. Schwartz is pointing out, right? It's the same shoresh as tase, the same shoresh as asui, and the idea is to fabricate something. So the idea is that the tzitzis must be fabricated after they're necessary, once they're already necessary, not before they're necessary. But fabrication is not a descriptive term of something that you could observe purely, exclusively with a video camera. Right? Fabrication, manufacture, is a legal term. And therefore, the legal system reserves the right to grant or withhold that title, right, from a particular process as it wishes. So says Rava, if the manufacture was done in violation of legal norms, then the legal system withholds the title of maase. We refuse to label it as manufactured. It's not going to get its tax breaks. Right, you're not going to be allowed to advertise it in certain ways. You can't say manufactured, right, in the United States if it wasn't ever manufactured, right? That would be false advertising. So the legal system withholds that title from the process. Right? But what you gain then is that at whatever point in time you remove the violation of the law, right, at whatever time you pay the ticket and you stop violating, that is when suddenly we'll grant manufactured, the title of manufactured, to the tzitzis. And so therefore Rava says that this is what's happening. As long as there's two tzitzis, this garment and its manufacturer, quote unquote, are in violation of the Isser of Baltosif. Right? What's Baltosif? The short, you know, really, really short version is he's making up his own Torah. He's making up his own Torah. He's not following God's Torah. God says, put one set of strings in each corner, right? And this guy went ahead and he made up his own mitzvah. He's a Karaite. He's a Sadducee. He's whatever it is. He's making up his own mitzvah. Baal Tosef. And he's following a different legal system. We can talk for a long time about the rabbi in medieval, I think it was probably Spain, medieval Spain, and he built an Eruv for a town that did not need an Eruv, and the Rosh, who was the God of Adar at the time, he said to him, what are you doing? Are you following God's Torah, or are you following your own Torah? God's Torah says that this town does not need an Eruv. So why are you building an Eruv? It sounds like you're following your own Torah. And there's a couple of other instances where you have that problem. So this guy who put on a second pair of tzitzis...
What was his answer?
He was not of sufficient consequence for his answer to be recorded. Right, we only have the record of the Rosh, who was a Gadol Hadar, who was chastising him, you know, for what he did. We don't have a record of his response because he wasn't of sufficient stature for his works to be preserved.
Unnecessary.
So,
paper doing it, probably did it.
Probably there was one sheet that said that it didn't. Maybe the row said no, but you want to be about clear, so it said yes.
Okay, we'll have to check what the case was. Because there are actually very big discussions about when do we say, right, that something is baltosif, and when do we say that something is, I just want to be 100% sure. So that, it's if there's a shita ha-machmira, we generally will not say that it's a violation of baltosif. It's only if there's no authority. Now, what is an authoritative shita? So different poskim, right, might have different definitions. You know, some poskim might say, oh no, that opinion, that, you know, whatever, that's roundly rejected. Right, you know, the opinion that so that's not so pashut exactly what's considered to be a totally rejected opinion that you can't, you know, say, oh, I want to just get halacha even according to this opinion. And when do we say that an opinion is accepted somewhat? And so then you could
also, even if somebody is makir something, but he but himself, he wants to be makmir, and he'll be makmir himself even though he is makir for the cloud.
Yeah.
So it could be that this particular Rav was being machmir on himself. It was machmir for everybody.
Right. So we really need a historiographer over here to uncover the details, you know, of the situation.
Yeah, right,
but right. But the from the Rosh's vantage point, right, this rabbi was not being choshesh for a potentially authoritative shita. This rabbi was just basically in ignorance of the halacha. Right, and if he was not listening, right, to what the halacha said, so then he was making up his own Torah. So that's the problem of baltosif. So this guy, as long as he's in violation of the law of baltosif, as long as he's not following God's Torah but following his own Torah, so we're not going to dignify his manufacturing process with the title of manufacture, with the title of maaseh. So the second set of tzitzis, even though physically you recorded it with a video camera, right, that he did wind and tie the tzitzis, but at the same time, the law refuses to define what he did as a maaseh. So it's not min ha'asoi. Min ha'asoi means prefabricated before the point where it became necessary. But guess what? These tzitzis may have been before the point that they became necessary, but they weren't fabricated at that point. Because fabrication, manufacture, is a legal title, and the law withholds that title from such tzitzis. When does the law grant the title of fabrication to these tzitzis? It's when you get rid of the first pair. At that point, the tzitzis are necessary again. They're necessary again. So the necessity and the bestowal of the title manufactured arrive at the same instant. It's not that one precedes the other. And so there's no problem of pre-fabricated, pre-manufactured tzitzis, right? In this case, the manufacture comes at the same instant as the necessity. That is Rava's solution. At least the way that Rashi reads it. Okay, this is going to get very complicated. So what was the response to Rava's solution? We have a very lightning quick back and forth. And I'm sort of dragging it out for you. In the Gemara, right, this is a back and forth within the space of a line. Right? We're already going from Rava, and now the ball is in the court back of the Stama de Gemara, or whoever will choose to defend the Stama de Gemara's question from Rava's answer. So let's just keep in mind the sequence here. Rabbi Zeira said that fourth case is kosher. The Stama de Gemara said, if the fourth case is kosher, the first three cases should be kosher as well. Right? Rava said, no, I'll tell you there's a difference between them. In the fourth case, right, he's violating baltosif. And that's why the manufacture comes at the same time as the necessity. The previous three cases, there's no violation of baltosif, and therefore the manufacture precedes the necessity. So now we're back, right, in the court of the Stama de Gemara, and who picks up the banner of the Stama de Gemara? Rav Papa. Ask if Lara Papa. So Rav Papa forcefully challenged Rava. Mimai de Gavra leosufe kamechave. Mimai. From what? From where? Where do you get this from? That the person who puts the second set of strings, the second quartet of strings, onto this beged, that the Gavra, the man, is leosufe kamechavein. That he's intending, his mind, right, he has in mind that he's gonna fulfill a new mitzvah, a newly invented mitzvah of a four-cornered garment with eight sets of strings. Who says that's what's in his mind, that his kavana is lehosif? for Tosefes. Dilma, maybe, levatulei kamichavim. Maybe what he really intends to do is to retire the first set of tzitzis, the first quartet, and to replace them with the second quartet, levatel, to make them null, to make them negligible. Not that the two of them are equivalent in any other context, right? But he maybe intends not to make up his own mitzvah, but rather to affix these tzitzis to the garment in fulfillment of God's mitzvah. And just his plan is that instead of first taking off the old tzitzios and putting on the new tzitzios, instead he'll do it in the opposite order. He'll affix the new tzitzios and then he'll take off the old tzitzios. If that's the case, says the Gemara, he would not be transgressing Baal Tosef. Right? Baal Tosef is defined by the intentions of the manufacturer, and in this case, his intentions are to fulfill God's Torah rather than to replace God's Torah. So therefore, he says, Baal Tosef Leika, there is no violation of Baal Tosef. And if there's no violation of Baal Tosef, Ma Seika, there is manufacturing. The law will grant him, will dignify his process, right, with the title, with the description of Asui. This is who we're reading now. Do you want we have extra Gemaras, I think. Yeah.
This is
Rapapa. Papa.
Why is it now? Is it
Tasa Velomina Asui again? So now it would become Tasa Velomina Asui again, exactly.
Why?
Because the tzitzis were manufactured prior to their being necessary.
The proper sequence was to undo the first set and then put the new one.
The word is a null.
Kavana may be good for Baal Tosef, but Kavana may not be good for negating Beged or making it from Tasha or
Osho. So Rava suggested that the manufacture takes place when the process is implemented, unless it's in violation of the law. So all Rav Papa is saying is that if he's not in violation of the law, so then the process and the manufacturer are at the same time, and both of those were prior to the necessity of tzitzis.
So the question is
one. I think it's Alvin that
you're talking about the assembling of the strings, get them ready to be tied into tzitzis and through the holes, or we're talking about before the old strings are removed and therefore the need for the new.
So the process that I'm describing is the winding and the tying. So this is a manufactured tzitzis. It became manufactured, right, when I did the minimal amount of tying and winding that I need for it to be kosher midiraisa. So basically that would probably be, let's call that one or two knots, right, and three loops in between, and that's when the initial stage initially that I could label it as manufactured.
But you can't attach them if they're partially assembled already, because you have to put the strings through the holes.
You made another hole.
Well, in this case, what happened was is that he put the strings through the holes and then he tied them. So the question is, did he manufacture them at the same moment that he tied them? Because he wasn't in violation of any other laws. Or was he in violation of those laws, and so even though he tied them, he still can't be considered to have manufactured them.
Was the previous set of tzitzits still in that hole?
Yeah, the previous set of tzitzits was still in the hole.
They weren't needed.
So they were not necessary, exactly.
Not necessarily, if the hole was big enough.
Whether he made in other holes or not doesn't make a difference. In other words, putting in the second set of strings is a problem. Whether they're in the same hole, different hole, it's just as problematic. So let me ask you, at the conclusion of the Gemara, what are we left with?
The original question.
We're left with the original question. In other words, Rabbi Zeira says this is kosher, right? And it seemed to be that everyone prior to Rabbi Zeira agreed that these three are apostles. They all seem to share the same quality of being prefabricated, in other words, fabricated, manufactured prior to being necessary. And so what accounts for the distinction between them? So here we have this interesting chain right, of different traditions. The Sfaradim have one tradition, the Ashkenazim have a different tradition, and then even amongst the groups, there are some sub-traditions. So I'm just going to tell you what so far what we have based on what we already know. Tosfos have a different definition of Tasa Volumina Asui. It's fabricated tzitzis that are fabricated prior to the four corners being completed. The Taz, to resolve, 16th, 17th century commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, says that Tosfos' definition was sort of his addition to the end of the Gemara's dialogue. The Gemara's dialogue concluded, right, with a difficulty. What's the difference between Rabbi Zeira's case of Hitil Lemuteles and the previous three cases, which are defined as Tasa Velomina Asui? So says the Taz, Tosfos' definition was formulated in response to that unanswered difficulty. It wasn't formulated at the earlier parts of the Gemara, it was formulated at the conclusion of the Gemara, when we were left with the discrepancy, right, between cases 1 to 3 and case number 4. Tosfos said, maybe, right, the answer for Rabbi Zeira is that we need to redefine Tasa Velomina Asoi. It's not tzitzis that are manufactured prior to being necessary, but rather it's tzitzis that were manufactured prior to the completion of the four corners.
So that's turning everything upside down.
In what way?
Because you're changing the whole business.
I don't know if I'm changing it or if I'm restoring it.
Oh.
Right. See, I would say that I'm restoring because it's clear this is kosher. The other three are pasul. So all that Tosfos is doing is where Rava, you know, perhaps, I mean, it's hard to say this, where Rava failed to explain the difference between case number 4 and the first three cases, Tosfos is saying, we have succeeded. Right, now that's a very bold type of statement to make. Right? But, right, that seems to be how Tosfos understood the Gemara, that the Gemara's conclusion of this sugya was inconclusive. That if you to be respectful, the Gemara understood that this was the answer, and that Rava's answer was not the right answer, but this was so simple that it went without saying. Right, or that the pedagogical value of leaving it unsaid outweighed the value of saying it. Right, but one way or another, right, Tosfos is saying this is really what the Gemara's intention was. Rabbi Zeira is halacha lemaisa, that the fourth case of Hitil Mutalis is kosher. The first three cases are halacha lemaisa, that the cases of the Tasa Velomina also is pasul. Rava's solution, right, doesn't seem to resolve the conflict between them. And so obviously the Gemara had some other solution. What's the smoothest solution is to propound this new definition of Tasa Velomina Asli, tzitzis that are fabricated prior to the completion of the Arba Kanfos. That is Tosfos. For Rashi, though, it's a little bit more complicated, right? Because for Rashi, Rashi seems throughout the sugya, without changing his mind, to define Tasa Velomina Asoi as Reb Menachem defined it, namely tzitzis that are manufactured prior to there being a need for them. So how is Rashi going to explain the conclusion of the Gemara? What exactly resolves the discrepancy between Rabbi Zeira, who says Hiti Lemuteles Kasher, and the first three cases where it's pasul? So Rashi tells us we need to look again, right, at the sequence. Usually we're inclined to think that each time that somebody new enters the game, so we are basically just volleying the ball back into the court of the previous So what did we have? We had Rabbi Zeira. Rabbi Zeira says Hitil Mutales Kosher, right? Okay, so now we've got at the stomach of the Gemara says, wait a second, Rabbi Zeira, Hitil Mutales Kosher? What about Tase Velomina Asui? The Rava comes along, right, and says, well, that's not really asui, right? Because since it's in violation of Baal Tosef, right, it's a problem. It was never manufactured, and so therefore the asiya, right, and the necessity come at the same time. Ooh, okay, good. So we've defended, right? We've defended Rabbi Zeira. Then came along Rav Papa, and he said, wait a second, right? If his intentions were not to create his own Torah, but rather were to follow God's Torah, just that he figured out, put on the new tzitzis before taking off the old tzitzis, he's not in violation of Bat Tosif, and then the Asiyah did precede the necessity. Bang! Right? So now the ball is back in Rebbe Zeira's court, and Rebbe Zeira is left, right? He's got to parry it, right, back into, right, to defend himself, and the Gemara leaves it off that way, where Rebbe Zeira is undefended. That's where Tosif steps in and says, you know, different definition of Tasav Lomina Asi. But Rashi can't do that. And so Rashi needs to reinterpret this. It's not a valley here. It's not a game of tennis. Right? There's no adversity between Rabbi Zeira and Rava and Rav Papa and the Stam of the Gemara, but rather it's a Bis Medrash. It's a seminar. Right? It's a brainstorming session, and everyone is contributing something. There's no adversity here. It's not as if that the Stam of the Gemara is challenging Rabbi Zeira and Rava is defending Rabbi Zeira and Rav Papa is restoring the challenge, but rather each one is simply revealing an additional complexity, right, in the sugya. So let's see how Rashi is going to read this. Rashi will tell us as follows. Rabbi Zeira says it's kosher. So the Stam of the Gemara says that's very perplexing, right? Because there are examples of Tasav Lomina Asi which are pasul. So Rava says, well, if it's in violation of Bat Tosif, so that would explain Rabbi Zeira. Right? If it's in violation of Bat Tosif, that would explain Rabbi Zeira. So the Stam of the Gemara says, you know, that's actually right. That this would be a case where the Asiyah and the necessity came at the same time if it was in violation of Bat Tosif. And so that explains Rabbi Zeira. What's Rav Papa coming to do now? So Rashi says Rav Papa is not coming to challenge Rava. He's not coming to challenge Rabbi Zeira, but rather he's coming to qualify Rava. To qualify Rav Zeira. Not to challenge. He accepts what Rava and Rav Zeira say. He accepts that sometimes Hittil Lemutalis is kosher. And he accepts that those sometimes, right, are cases where the guy intended to make up his own Torah, to violate Bat Tosif, right, and in that case, the law does not dignify his process of putting on the second set of tzitzis with the title of Asiyah. But, says Rav Papa, I have to tell you, in order that people shouldn't make a mistake, that won't always be true. It will sometimes be true. When will it be true? Just the second album. It will sometimes be true. Namely, it will be true when the guy's intentions are to violate Bat Tosif. That's when it'll be kosher. Reb Zeira will be correct under those circumstances. But, right, if the guy's intentions are to be mevatel the tzitzis, to nullify the first pair, right, and to instead use exclusively the second set, so then Rabbi Zeira would have to concede. I'm telling you, says Rav Papa, that Rabbi Zeira would concede in a circumstance. That's what emerges organically from what Rava says. That since Rabbi Zeira's heter, Rabbi Zeira was the machshir of these tzitzis, and his hechsher is predicated on the guy's violating Bat Tosif. So therefore, if the person didn't have the wrong intentions, and he wasn't in violation of Bat Tosif, so then Rabbi Zeira would concede and withdraw his hechsher. So between Rava and Rav Papa, we don't have two, you know, opposite teams valleying back and forth, but rather Rava and Rav Papa are brainstorming. They're trying to apply Rabbi Zeira. We know that there's a conflict between Rabbi Zeira and the previous three cases. Rava suggests we can resolve that conflict by saying that here there's a violation of Bat Tosif and not in the earlier cases. And Rav Papa says, well, if that's the solution, so the halacha lemaisa, we would be forced to differentiate between a case where the guy has the wrong intentions, runs afoul of Bat Tosif, and therefore will ironically give his tzitzis a hechsher, right, and a case where the person has the right intentions, does not violate Bat Tosif, and therefore, ironically, we will not be able to give his tzitzis a hechsher. That's how Rashi reads the Gemara. Okay. One second. Alvin had a question, and then...
Assuming that the first set is being replaced because it became at the pasul for some reason, then can't you say that it's that Is that a second set? Because the second set is replacing the bare first set?
Welcome to the team. So now it's Rava, Rapapa, and Alvin, meaning we're having another variable, right, that we need to add on. It's, you're absolutely right. Right. If the first set was possible somehow, so that would also allow us to support Rabbi Zeira in giving a hechsher to that pair of tzitzis. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just have one issue.
Yes.
Rash one. Yes. It says the last thing Rashi says on the topic is v'hadar kusha l'duchte.
The kusha is it's tib ta'aseh lo min ha'asui.
So therefore,
that's for how can he be machshirit? That's what he's saying. How can he be machshirit if it's ta'aseh lo min ha'asui? If we say that,
but he said that Rav Papa and Rava and Rav Zeira were not playing football.
Point taken. Yeah. So, having read, I didn't read enough on the topic. But the amount that I read, there's someone who uses Rashi's definitions in that way. If it's not Rashi himself, then there's achronim who do that. Now, yeah, no, for Rashi might, right, so for Rashi, we'll just reject Reb Zeira, maybe. We'll say that those tittis are possible because of Tasa Volumina Asoi, right, as well. That could be. So let me do the Ashkenazi psak first, because that's the simplest. The psak for Ashkenazim, the Ramah says, right, is that this case of Hitil Mutalis is kosher without any qualifications. In other words, whether the guy intended to be Mevatel them, whether he intended to be Mosif, it makes no difference. Without qualifications, this is kosher. That seems to be the psak of the Ramah in the footsteps of Tosfos. Right? Tosfos say, Tasav Lomina Asoi means manufactured prior to the four corners. Here the four corners precede the tzitzis, and therefore there's no problem of Tasav Lomina Asoi. That is the explanation of the Taz for the Ramah based on Tosfos.
Just to be clear, it means he has to undo the first set.
Subject, again, we're working from within the laws of tzitzis. And if you want to know how Baal Tosif impacts the kashrus of the tzitzis, so there's a big discussion. Probably you're right. You are probably correct that as long as this tzitzis looks so strange, they are not going to be kosher. You need to make them normal again, right? But once you've made them normal, you don't run into any problems that are internal to Hilchos tzitzis. And then there's big discussions. You cut off the first pair, the second pair kosher. You cut off the second pair, the first pair kosher. Those are Baal Tosif discussions and not Hilchos tzitzis discussions.
It has to be kosher because as soon as he puts on the second pair of tzitzis, he's already, whatever he has in mind, whether he takes them off later or not, at the moment he puts it on, he's over a Baal Tosif and should be also.
It doesn't also beg it. He did an Avera, but then he undo it and it's okay. It's like, V'anotar, Ador HaBoker. It's love and it's up to say. He can still, he passed the love, unfortunately. He did the love, but he still did the say, and he did the mitzvah. So it's okay.
It's not Motor Lechatchila.
But if he did it,
he did it.
Right, although, if you're intending to be Mevatelet, so then it is Motor Lechatchila, because you're intending to be Mevatel, you're not violating Baal Tosif. So you would think, right, that it's manufactured prior to its being necessary. Tosfos would say, no. It's manufactured after the four corners are completed and you're good. So that's the most, controversial case. And Tosfos would say, even if he's mechavin levatel, we'll still give a hechsher to this talus. That's Tosfos. For the Sfardim, though, they don't follow Tosfos. They don't either follow Rashi. What the Sfardim passing, and this is how the Shulchan Aruch says, is that if the person violates Baal Tosif, if his intention was to make up his own tzura of tzitzis, so then we don't give a hechsher. Right? Before I was saying for Rashi, everything's counterintuitive. If he did the aveira, we give him a hechsher. And if he didn't do an aveira, so then we don't give him a hechsher. The Sfardim, right, do what's intuitive logically, namely, if he did the aveira, we don't give him a hechsher. We say that the tzitzis are pasul. And if he didn't do the Aveira, if he was Mechavin Levatel, not to create a new form of tzitzis, so then we give him the Hechsher. The question is, how does that work in the Gemara? Right? The Gemara seemed to say, again, we have these four steps. Rabbi Zeira says kosher. The Gemara challenges, isn't that a problem of Tasa v'lo min asoi? Rava says, well, he violated Baal Tosef, that's why Rabbi Zeira is machshir, right? And then Rav Papa says, yeah, but if he's mevatelid, so then it still poses a difficulty, and so Rabbi Zeira couldn't be machshir if his kavana is levatel. Those are the four steps, and they seem to yield the opposite, right? The counterintuitive conclusion, but the text, right? The text is the king, not logic, right? So how do the Sfaradim resolve, right, their logical psak, right, with the conflicting evidence from the text? So here, the Rambam and the Beis Yosef do something very interesting. Let's see if I can replicate this.
This is the Rambam.
The Rambam gives this psak, and the Beis Yosef tries to explain how the Rambam gets it from the text. I sort of hinted to this. It's a question of punctuation. Punctuation. Is anyone familiar, right, with the joke about the panda and the bar? The panda and the bar. No? This is a famous joke. No. This is how it goes. Okay, excellent. So do you want to tell it?
No.
So a panda walks into a bar and he orders a nice meal. And he eats the meal, and he pulls out a gun, shoots up the whole place, and walks out. So the bartender, the restaurant manager, whatever it is, runs after him and says, "What do you think you're doing? This is crazy, crazy bear." And the panda says, "I'm a panda, look it up." So the bartender takes out his dictionary and opens it up, and it says, "Panda, bear, certain colors, native to these countries. Eats, shoots, and leaves."
What?
Eats, shoots, and leaves.
So,
bamboo shoots, whoever needs an explanation.
So that's like the classical story to demonstrate, to illustrate the importance, right, of proper punctuation. Do we have a colon, right? A colon after eats, or is there a comma after eats? And the difference is quite radical. So the Rambam is going to tell us that perhaps we are placing a period where really an exclamation mark belongs. So let's go back and read the same words of the Gemara with a slightly different set of punctuation and see whether that will yield us the logical conclusion which the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch seem to follow. Again, the Gemara says, "Umiyar minan tasa v'lomin asoi? Do we have such a thing as tasa v'lomin asoi? Is that genuinely going to disqualify a pair of tzitzis? Didn't Rabbi Zeira say v'ha'amar Rabbi Zeira hitio l'mutales k'sheira?" And so Rava says, "Hashta b'bal tosif koi maisa lo havi." So how did Rashi punctuate that? "Hashta b'bal tosif koi," since, right, he's violating bal tosif, therefore Maisa lohavi, therefore it's not a maisa. Rashi put a what punctuation mark there?
Period.
A period. Since he's violating Baal Tosif, therefore it's not a maisa. What would happen if we put an exclamation mark there? Hashta bebaal tosif kai. Would it even work? He's violating Baal Tosif, and it shouldn't be a maisa. There's a double negative there, right? It's a bitmiya, but there's a double negative, meaning he's violating Baal Tosif, so it shouldn't be a maisa. In other words, right, because he's violating Baal Tosif, it should be a maisa.
Right.
Now, it's a little bit of a forced reading, because the whole concept of distinguishing, right, between manufactured and not manufactured, for Rashi, this line was what introduced that distinction. The Rambam is assuming that we're already familiar with the distinction. We're already familiar with the fact that the legal system can withhold, right? The title manufactured, right, from something. And so the Rambam is saying Rava is just plunging in to these pre-assumptions, and he's saying that since you're violating Baal Tosef, we will not withhold the title manufactured. In other words, since you're violating Baal Tosef, we'll stamp it as manufactured, and it was manufactured too early, right? It was manufactured while this garment still did not need tzitzis, and that's why it will be possible. We won't give it a hechsher, right? Because he's violating Baal Tosef, we're gonna lehachis, we're gonna give it the status of manufactured, and since it was since we're giving it that status earlier on, that's going to invalidate it. Then Rav Papa comes along and says, "Mimai de gavra lo sufi kamechavein." Maybe he's not intending to be mosif, and he's only being mechavein levatule kamechavein, and therefore, Baal Tosef leka maisa ika with another exclamation point. Since right, there's no Baal Tosef, right, and you're calling it a Maisa? No, it's not a Maisa. It's not a Maisa. Yeah.
Because it Levitule comes from.
So
it's not manufacturing something which is exists.
Now, again, we're saying that we already knew, right, that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch are hard to read into the text. Changing the period to an exclamation point solves, or at least it gets us to a little bit easier of a reading of the text. Right? But I think that we're all sensitive to the fact that it still is not perfect. Right? Because really, what we don't want to say Baal Tosef Leka, right? And therefore there's a Maisa, right? What we want to say is that if there's no transgression of Baal Tosef, therefore it's not a violation of Min Ha'asui. So the point is not that there's no Maisa, right? How can it be that there's... Right, the logic of that connection, if there is Baal Tosef, so then there is an early Maisa. If there's no Baal Tosef, then there's no early Maisa. That's already a little bit...
If it's a Maisa, then the tzitzis are kosher, according to Rav Zeir? Because there is...
For Rabbi Zeir, or really for Rav Papa, when we say, right, Maisa Ika, exclamation point, so the exclamation point really means, right, that is there a Maisa? There's no Maisa. There's no Maisa is just a synonym for saying that therefore it's kosher, because it wasn't Asui. Right? But the reason that it's kosher is not... because it wasn't Asoy, it was Asoy. It's kosher for some other reason. So that's what we have to figure out. So I'm not sure. We may pick up with this Rambam tomorrow, but we may just move onwards, and the Rambam will be for you to solve on your own. That Lemaisa is the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch, so I'm probably going to have to... It's really going to depend whether I have time to research the Rambam properly.
In other words,
but
the Rambam is very involved.